Thank you for the introduction, and good morning, and thanks for coming so early to see this. Yeah, my student Osvaldo Toliver was supposed to be here, but he decided to start harvesting the remainder of his plots because we got a 16.5 Fahrenheit temperature last Thursday. So he said, if I go to meetings, when I come back, all my turnips are going to be completely melted down. So he decided to stay. So I'll present some of his data with he's doing a lot of studies on forage brassicas, planted as cover crops, and we are looking at the nutritional quality of all these different crops. So cover crops in North Dakota, just to put you in the perspective, first I'm going to define it because somebody was telling me yesterday that we got a wrong definition. But cover crop, we call it crop planted after the cash crop, you know, with the main purpose of covering the soil, you know, reduce erosion, recycle nutrients, increase biodiversity, and we can also, and that's what we're interested in, using as a fall forage resource. Somebody told me that if you harvest a cover crop, then it's not a cover crop anymore. But we've seen that we still keep a lot of those benefits, even if we graze it or harvest it. In North Dakota in 2012, according to the stats, is we had 213,000 acres of forage of cover crops in the state. A lot of those are radishes, you know, and mixes, and so a lot of those include forage brassicas. Different with other states, we don't use so much of winter rye as a cover crop like in another, you know, in the eastern states. We use a lot of the forage brassicas, so a lot of those acres include forage brassicas. So we have some pros of brassicas related to the as a nutritional quality and for animals. Okay, first, they tolerate very low temperatures. You know, even with 20 Fahrenheit, these plants don't get killed. So that gives a longer window for us to be able to use it in the fall as a forage. And also, they'll give it more time because these plants grow at very low temperatures too. We are going to have also very low cost of harvesting because we don't have to, you know, go cut it, dry it, hay it, bale it. We just put the cows in there to graze it. So we have that advantage. And also we'll still have the benefits of the cover crop even, you know, if we graze it. You know, a lot of those will remain because the roots will still be able to recycle those nutrients, and the cows will benefit from those nutrients that are going into the brassica. So, but we have some limitations. You know, we have a small window of cover crops for planting after cereal crop. That's what we usually do, after wheat or another cereal. We really can, at least not yet, you know, plant a cover crop after corn or soybean because they come out too late in the season for us to do that. So we have a short time for these plants to grow, 70 to 90 days, depending on the season and when we get the really hard frost. But it's really amazing, and you've seen the results, how much these plants can produce in such a short time of cold temperatures. And so that's where the limit is. And I put a picture there of a swede, you know, and you can see the snow around, and the plant's still green. Not a problem. So the objectives of this particular study was mainly to evaluate the yield and nutritional quality of 17 between species and varieties of forage brassicas, but planted as a cover crop, okay, planted in August, the early fall, and to determine the adaptability of them, the yield differences among all these different varieties and species, and also the nutritional quality. So for that, we had different species, and within them, different cultivars of the species. You know, we got many seed companies cooperated with this, and because they wanted the material evaluated and see how it does. So we have turnips, six cultivars, radish, three cultivars, hybrids, you know, between them, between Repa and Napus, for five cultivars, rape, and Ethiopian cabbage. We have one cultivar. So the total 17 forage brassicas were evaluated at two sites, okay, and we plant in the fall. You know, he's actually harvesting this again, so we're going to have two full years of data, but this is the first years at two locations. And You know, this we planted with our plot planter and put them at, you know, 6 inches rows, you know, 15 centimeters. And we planted a no-till on an old residue. And most of the years we use the old residue. Here in this one, you know, it's not a good picture. It looks like there's no residue left. But most of them, it was quite a bit of residue, even standing oats, because what we did is we harvest the oats, bale it, you know, take it out of the field, and then spray Roundup, you know, to avoid that competition. So we had some standing stubble. We tried to leave a stubble of 8 inches or so we can use that to catch some snow too and have some of those benefits for moisture since we're in a drier area. So we had these two locations, Fargo and Prosper. The seeding date was 8 and 9 of August in the different locations, and we harvest, this was last year, November 21st and November 15th. So this year is going to be similar. You know, he's still harvesting, so it's going to be about the same. And we evaluate, you know, biomass production, taking samples for 1 meter square in each plot and all the reps, and also we evaluate all the forage quality. So, but I'm only going to present the data for the leaves, not for the roots. So separate all the samples and roots and leaves, but we are mainly now focused on the quality of the above ground leaf material. And thanks to Dan Anderson, that he did all of our analysis with the NIRS. You know, we did all the curves. We did the wet chemistry in Fargo, but with some samples, and then he did the NIRS, you know, over there, because couldn't, you know, spend that much money in so many samples. And this was an RCVD, split plot arrangements, because we had you know, we put the crops, you know, species, and then the cultivars within. So we went to the results. You see, this is a lot of data, but I tried to split and explain it so it's clear. You see here all the 17. It's hard to see. I tried to highlight. Turnips were the highest yielding ones. And what is really interesting here is to see, is there a pointer here?
I don't know.
We don't have one. Okay. Where is there? Okay, turnips were very high, and you can see they're about 5, you know, megagrams per hectare of tonnage, you know, of dry matter. This is dry matter yield total when you add leaves and roots. Okay, we pull all the roots, and we you do both. But most of this, and you see in turnips, the yield is in leaves, which is very interesting that you can get in such a short time that much material. And you see that turnips were the highest. And then I want to highlight, too, that the hybrids were, because the hybrids almost don't have root mass. They're mainly leaves. You know, they're called the, you know, leaf turnips, or they have different names for them. So, but the leaf production is pretty high, too. We had a big difference. That's why I put both locations separate, because you see that big differences in yield among the locations. It's a strong interaction. And the reason is the moisture level. This forage brassicas is very sensitive. We get, you know, last year we got about 4 or 5 weeks of no moisture in August. So the problem is, especially in Fargo, we had a problem, and then the yield goes way down when you have a very dry fall. So that's one of the limitations that we have, and that's why the information is presented separate. So here I just took the one they're highlighted here, and you can see the turnips, they were the highest yielding. You can see the relationship between roots and leaves. Both roots and leaves were much lower in Fargo than they were, and that's mainly because of water. You know, even we both plant them in August, if, you know, August 9, 10, the ones in Fargo came a lot later because there wasn't moisture, you know, in the soil. Because we plant no-till, whether it's moisture or not, we plant it anyway to try to get it going. So that's going to be always a limitation in our area if you can get the crop going. And here you see the hybrids in some picture, you know, some pictures of the crop, how it looks. And you can see that the leaf brassicas can have a very interesting yield on dry matter and leaves only. You see in the picture there is a lot of oats that came back because we had some seeds still there. but when we harvested, we only took the brassica portion, so the oats even in the pictures are in there, are not part of the dry matter, okay? Forage quality, this is interesting to see. We know, all, if you look at all of them, they're all very high, they're very high quality. Okay, this is very high digestible forage. You know, it has high water, you know, high soluble nutrients. But there is some differences among them. And you can see also, again, we have Fargo, it has a lot lower quality than Prosper. And again, moisture is what it has to do, even, you know, when we have a smaller plant, you know, and also we have a drier area, the plant is more fibrous and it's going to have lower quality when it's smaller than when it's bigger and lushy and has more water to grow. So you can see the differences in quality in these, and I'll go in more detail of each one of them. You can look at the turnips. In turnips, you can see, again, the ones that were the highest yielding, you know, here, were also very high in quality. You see they have a protein. Some of them have very high levels of protein, you know, close to 20%. So that's a very high crude protein content. They're very high in ash, too, and that could be a problem in animals. Usually animals, when they're grazed on forage brassicas, they need to be supplemented with fiber because this is such a low fiber that they'll get diarrhea if they only eat this. So it needs a supplemental fiber or some kind of, you know, high fiber, low-quality forage. So, but we can see here again that if we have less water, you know, we have less yield, but also leaves are going to have a higher fiber content. The whole plant has fiber content, so higher NDF, and it's going to end up with a little lower forage quality, although still it's a good quality because it's a forage brassica. And the rape and the hybrids, these are the really high, and the reason these plants have higher than the turnips is because the leaves are, they have a lot less like veins or stems, so it's more of a soluble material on the leaves and the larger leaves. So you're going to have a larger, you know, a higher leaf to stem ratio when you have rapes of these hybrids. And they're actually intended for, you know, have more leaf than roots, so that's the purpose and very high. Again, here we have lower fiber, we have high protein, we have the highest quality. And then the last one is the forage radish and Ethiopian cabbage. Leaves quality also, Ethiopian cabbage was very, very high for the same reason. And radishes, the three varieties we had, they're the lowest in quality of all these forage brassicas. And the main reason is the leaves are a lot coarser than all the other varieties. So if a summary, we got all the TDN. You'll see that, you know, I put them with turnips, rapes, hybrids, and radishes. You see the rape and hybrids are the higher total digestible nutrients values, and because of the type of leaves and the higher leaf-to-stem ratio. And then also Ethiopian cabbage fall significantly in the same category as those, and radishes being the lowest of all of them. With that, you know, conclusions, we have the two varieties that were the winners on the turnips on yield. Okay, we still think it's amazing how much we can get in such a short time in some of the locations if we have water. And although the quality for all of them is very good, you know, we can see some differences in some of these forage brassicas, and we'll have higher digestibility and total digestible nutrients for some of the brassicas, like the rape and some of the hybrids. So in some of these are very good late forage grazing resources. So this has been very interesting to do. And with that, I'll let you questions if there's any time.
Yes, time for one question. And so again, if you don't mind repeating your question.
Yes, thanks.
Any questions?
You mentioned that water was primary issue. I'm just thinking, do you have long-term climatology that could tell you where you would have a high probability of seasonal rainfall being added, just sort of to think about a system for your state or the region based on long-term climatology?
Okay, the question is if we have some, you know, record data, climatology data that we could use, you know, to predict, you know, when is the water we're going to have enough to be this successful system. This is very interesting you ask this because this is exactly what we're trying to do in one of our projects, is trying to develop a climate model that we can use, the farmers can use as a prediction model to see the the success they're going to have with the cover crop and the dates. Because if we know, you know, so we could say, the problem with some of these ones, the seeds can be expensive, you know. So if we're in an area where we know we're not going to get any moisture, we're losing all that money. So we're trying to develop this model, you know, with the climatologists in our university and trying to see if we can tell the growers, you know, the probability of success they're going to have. So it's very interesting because we are trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.